Welcome to the Yoga Hour, offering insights and practices for spiritually conscious living in today's world. Here is your host, Dr. Laurel Trujillo.
Welcome to the Yoga Hour, where we talk about yoga in all its depth and breadth as a path to spiritually conscious, fulfilled living in today's world. I'm Dr. Laurel Trujillo, host and producer of the show. Today, we're going to be discussing love and the transformative teachings of divine love as the foundation for happier, healthier relationships. I'm really fortunate to be joined today by my teacher and the founder and spiritual director of the Yoga Hour, Yogacharya Ellen Grace O'Brien. Yogacharya O'Brien is an acclaimed teacher, award-winning author, and minister who has served seekers of spiritual enlightenment from all walks of life for over 30 years. She has published several books and audio programs about meditation, mindfulness, and spiritual living, offering a refreshing and authentic voice that makes timeless wisdom accessible to the modern mind. As a teacher in the tradition of Kriya Yoga, Yogacharya O'Brien serves people from all faith backgrounds who are seeking what is known as self and God realization or awakening. She's the spiritual director of the Center for Spiritual Enlightenment, a meditation center in San Jose, California, and is the sponsor of this program, the Yoga Hour. Welcome to the Yoga Hour, Yogacharya O'Brien. I'm really delighted that you could join me today on the podcast to talk about love.
Thank you so much, Dr. Trujillo, and thanks to the Yoga Hour team and all the subscribers to the program. It's wonderful. It's been going on now for a long time, and it's such a wonderful resource. I do want to say, time passes so quickly, and you mentioned I've been teaching for over 30 years. It's actually over 40 now. So that happened. And I thought, okay, yeah, life passes quickly.
Yes, it does. So before we begin our dialogue about how love loves love, let's begin with a moment of contemplation. Let's begin right where we are and have a yoga moment. Om. So let's just be right here, right now. Let's let go of anything that may have happened earlier today and let go of any concern about what might happen later, and just be right here. Let's feel our body in space, no matter what we're doing, just feeling our body and paying particular attention to the surfaces that support our weight. Then we can turn to that wonderful tool that's always with us, the breath, and just notice as we take a fully conscious breath, the next inhale, and exhale. On the next inhale, what parts of the body are moving? On the exhale, you feel them return to their resting state. The next inhale, feeling the cool air in the nostrils. And on the exhale, noting how now that air has been warmed. As it passes out through the nose, we can feel that change in temperature. As we rest here, right where we are, here's something to contemplate, a quote from Paramahansa Yogananda. The greatest love you can experience is in communion with God in meditation. The love between the soul and spirit is the perfect love. The love you are all seeking. When you meditate, love grows. Millions of thrills pass through your heart. If you meditate deeply, a love will come over you such as no human tongue can describe. You will know God's divine love, and you will be able to give that pure love to others. If you meditate deeply, a love will come over you such as no human tongue can describe. You will know God's divine love, and you will be able to give that pure love to others. Om. Once again, Yogacharya O'Brien, welcome back to the Yoga Hour. It's always a joy to speak with you. And I'm looking forward to our conversation today about love based on your recent satsang series, which you titled Love Loves Love. I should note for those listeners who would like to hear the full messages, they are available on Yogacharya O'Brien's podcast, Kriya Yoga Living, which is available wherever you get your podcasts. So Yogacharya, what led you to choose this theme, Love Loves Love, for this series of satsang messages?
Every once in a while, I like to bring up the topic of relationships because we all have relationships and we all want to know how to apply our spiritual experience to the world of our relationships. And it's really, you know, has three components to it. You know, we study the philosophy and we understand, you know, what is the foundation of life and how does love fit into that? And I understand we'll talk about that in a moment. And then we have our experiences of expansiveness in meditation and through insight of the philosophy. And then we have the exercise of practical application. You know, Yogananda said too, besides this quote that you gave, which is so beautiful, how we can experience divine love that is so expansive. But then we have to learn, you know, how can that change our way of being in relationship? Because we all want to do that, you know, as practitioners of yoga. We don't want to just experience peace and love when we're meditating. We want to know how to bring it into our relationships. And he said that relationships can also teach us about expanding our love. So when you have an intimate relationship, whether it's, you know, with a partner, with a husband, wife, or with a child, even it could be with a pet, that you begin to expand your capacity beyond self-love, you know, to love one other person, one other being. And he said, you know, don't stop there. You know, let this experience of love become ever more expansive for you. That's what it should do. And, you know, I remember, and you may have had some similar experience because I know you're also a mom and now a grandmother. When I had my first child, when I had my daughter, you know, it was such a powerful experience to become a mother. And I was really young and I, you know, I didn't have much insight into the world or a relationship or any of that. But what happened was my heart just broke open, like seeing this little being that now, you know, I was to care for. And I felt the heart of mothers all over the world. It was a very expansive spiritual experience because I knew that the feelings that I had for her were the feelings that every mother has. You know, I wanted her to survive. I wanted to care for her. I wanted her to have food. And, you know, and then my awareness went to, well, not all mothers do have food for their children. And, you know, what might that be like? And so it just broke my heart open. And it also, I think, planted some seeds, you know, for the dharmic expression of what I would do with my life later on.
Mm. Oh, that's such a great example and totally shows what we're trying to talk about today, which is this relationship between divine love and how that can really help us in our other relationships. So in this satsang series, you are focusing on how divine love can help us have happier and healthier relationships, which I suspect is a universal goal for everyone. And toward this end, you stress 3 points. The first is seeing God as love itself. And the second is understanding how the mind colors our experience of relationship. And then the third is learning to let go. And we're going to talk about each of those in turn. So regarding the first goal, seeing God as love itself, in the satsang series, you referred to Autobiography of a Yogi, where Paramahansa Yogananda concludes his masterwork, Autobiography of a Yogi, with the phrase, God is love. God's plan for creation can be rooted only in love. God is love. God's plan for creation can be rooted only in love. So we've already touched on this a little bit. How does seeing God as love itself help us to have these happier, healthier relationships?
Well, in the philosophy of yoga, you know, we are, the philosophy underlying our practice is that there's one reality that's called by many names, and that reality expresses, manifests as all that is, including, you know, all of life, creation itself, all beings, you know, you and me. And so that reality of God is the reality of our life. And so, you know, the many spiritual traditions offer the teaching that God is love. And so Yogananda does conclude the autobiography with that. And, you know, as a writer, I always feel that the first words and the last words in a book are something for us to take note of. And so I thought it was an interesting choice for him. And there's a lot that's contained in that. And I would say that with regard to relationships, it's really helpful for us to understand that love is the reality of our own nature, so that we don't get caught up in a sense, trying to create love. Love isn't something that's created. It's the natural core of our being, which is unconditionally loving, peaceful, awake, aware, like that. So, you know, my guru, Roy Eugene Davis, who's a disciple of Paramahansa Yogananda, was very focused on the wisdom of yoga. And he didn't particularly like it when people would say, oh, God is love, because it's hard to understand what that means. And so he would explain it, you know, that God is not, if this is not an emotion, it's not a feeling, it's not like God loves you and that feels good and it's comforting. It has to do with God being the fundamental essence of your being, and that being is imbued with this quality of support and nurturance and peace. And so that as the foundation of our being, we can learn that it's already there, and we just need to learn how to bring it into expression in our relationships.
In your book, Living the Eternal Way, you write, God as love refers to that, capital T that, which creates the worlds out of itself and calls them back into its own beginning. This is referring to the Samkhya philosophy, Samkhya science behind. Samkhya refers to the process of manifestation, the process of you know, creating the world. And in this setting, there's the the view that God as love is the attracting current in world manifestation. Would you give us an overview of this concept of love as the creative current?
Well, I think the main idea is that because it is supreme consciousness, along with its power of nature that has the qualities of manifestation, emerging as the world, that's the underlying reality, and that supreme consciousness is not separate from the world. God is not separate from the world, and is this underlying support, but it is also, we could use expressions like a current of love that is calling us into divine remembrance. So it expresses in the world, but because we have this body mind ego complex, we come into the world and we forget that we are spiritual beings. We forget about our soul essence, but there is inherent, because it is our very nature, divine love or absolute truth or reality is our very nature. We're called to awaken, to remember that. So it's kind of twofold for me. One, knowing that we're always supported, and that we are always being called to awaken to the truth of our being. And that is, to express that divine nature, in our life, in our world, in our relationships.
You also write, we have the ability to cultivate divine love in our thoughts, words, and actions. The cultivation of divine love can be a path home back to the true self. How is the cultivation of divine love a path back home to the true self?
Well, basically it's just ways in which we can learn not to be caught up in the primal error of identifying, as an ego, as a separate self, because then our relationships are spoiled, because we look at another person in terms of what they can give us, what they can do for us, versus our capacity as spiritual beings to come from a place of fullness and be in mutual support of our partner, expressing their fullness as well. I was thinking about, my journey of relationship, knowing I was going to talk to you today, and I was thinking about three really important people in my life who gave me relationship advice that was all good, and in a way how it became progressive for me in terms of intimate relationships. So it was a question that I had early on in my life about how do you succeed in marriage, and it took me a long time to learn, because part of that was waking up and clearing away the old samskaras. But the first advice I had was from my grandmother, who I think of as my first guru. She was very wise and she had really good advice, but she, she was really succinct. So I asked her early on, for her advice about marriage. And she kind of gave me that classical answer that many grandmothers, and I think some people still give today, which is never go to bed angry.
Yeah.
And, that's really good advice, meaning, don't let things fester, learn how to work things out, how to compromise and so on. But I was never good at that because I never understood how to manage anger or resentment or hurt, So I might have to stay up all night if the instruction was don't go to bed angry, because I didn't know, how not to be angry.
Right.
And that really wasn't the point. But anyway, that was my first instruction. And then a second instruction I had was a similar one, is kind of the opposite side. I asked my guru one time, what his formula was for success in intimate relationship. And he said, just be kind to one another. So it was kind of the opposite of that one, instead of avoiding something, it was like, well, cultivate this, learn how to be compassionate and kind. And I think, you know, his viewpoint about that as a formula for relationship, you know, came out of his capacity to see, you know, who we are as spiritual beings and also who we are as human beings. You know, we all make mistakes. We have imprints from the past that are, you know, superimposed on our present situation that cause us to say and do things that, you know, we don't feel proud of. Mm-hmm. And so he said, you know, just be kind, like give one another some slack. And so that was really good advice, but still it wasn't quite it. But as a whole package, these things started coming together. And then, you know, when my husband and I got married, his guru is or was Baba Hari Das. And Babaji, as he was fondly called, wrote us a letter when we were about to be married. And in the letter, he gave his advice. And his advice, he said, row the boat of life together with the oars of the virtues and find peace and happiness together. So for me, you know, I mean, I was well on the yoga path by then. And I completely understood that having a sadhana, this is about sadhana, you know, having a spiritual practice is what can allow you to learn how to mitigate and manage your anger and also to let you bring forth your kindness and your compassion. So I think that's a very helpful progression of looking at the advice for a relationship.
No, that was great. Such, you know, such a great progression, as you said, you know, from your grandmother to your teacher, you know, to your husband's teacher. Just, it's lovely. Thank you for sharing that. So in the satsang message, you include a quote, a poem by the Islamic mystic poet Saadi, if I'm saying that correctly, Saadi, from the 13th century, which I thought was really beautiful. So I was going to go ahead and read that here. In love, there are no days and nights. For lovers, it is all the same. The musicians have gone, yet the Sufis listen, because their ear, their eye, their heart is tuned to that which is beyond change and phenomena. The music has gone, yet the Sufis listen. In love, there is a beginning, but no end. In love, there is a beginning, but no end. I just find that just really, really beautiful. And it brings to mind the question then, how is it that love can have a beginning but no end?
It is a beautiful poem, and it's, of course, about the mystical experience. Right. And so there's a beginning for us spiritually when we have the insight about the omnipresence and in that the nearness of divine love. When we awaken to that divine love as always present and as our life itself, there's a beginning to that, a beginning. There's a before and an after. You know, when we awaken to that, that's a beginning for us. But in spiritual awakening, if it's true awakening, there's no end to it because we're awakening to that which is endless. And so for me, you know, that's what it says. The beginning is our beginning. It's not the beginning of love, but it's our beginning of waking up to it. And then there is no end because once you see the way things are, you don't unsee it.
Right, right. Yeah, beautiful. I wanted to turn back to one more thing that you said in the talk, and I think this is an interesting one because in a way it's sort of a bridge between this first thing that we're talking about, this first point, seeing God as love itself, and then the second point, understanding how the mind colors our experience of relationship. So you said, to abide in endless love, unconditional, unchanging love, We are to let go of the belief, the fantasy, the idolatry that we or someone else is somehow separate from the source, somehow separate from love itself. How does divine unconditional love become then something we live, something that is realized, experienced, and actualized?
It's a practice.
I actually like that we started the quote with Yogananda about meditation, building, you know, our capacity to love.
Yeah. It's a practice. You know, I think through our regular meditation practice, you know, the mind, and that's what Kriya Yoga is all about, you know, the mind and the body are purified of the dross, you know, of imprints that color our perception, and the fundamental one that is, you know, the creator of our problem is the false identification with the idea of a separate self, you know. And then when we're trying to be in relationship as an ego-based identity, you know, the foundation of ego is scarcity, because it posits this idea of separate self. So when we understand that, we see that ego can never feel complete, you know, by its very function, by its very definition. If you are seeing this idea of separate from the whole, then there is, from there, there is no route to wholeness. You know, it's a metaphysical leap. It's an immersion in divine love, you know, that cures that error of perception. Mm-hmm. So we need sort of that immersion that superconscious meditation can give us in the direct experience of our own wholeness, you know, that begins to purify the mind of that idea of being separate. So, you know, it's not just like the sage in our tradition, Lahiri Mahasaya, said, you know, the picture of a river will not satisfy your thirst. So it's the same thing, you know, with divine love. You know, like a Hallmark card is not going to bring it. You know, what, although they're nice, you know, I like to get those, but what's going to bring it is the actual drink, you know, is the actual immersion, is the actual experience of it. And then again, you know, having philosophical insight into it so that we can begin to track our own changes, our own progress, and see what's happening, you know, as we open. So it's not just about accidental grace. It's about intentional alignment with higher purpose and divine grace. Did I answer the question?
Yes, I think
that was the question. Yes.
As a reminder to our listeners, today on the Yoga Hour, my guest is Yogacharya Ellen Grace O'Brien, an award-winning author, acclaimed teacher, and who has served seekers of spiritual enlightenment from all walks of life for over 40 years. You can find out more about Yogacharya O'Brien at her website, ellengraceobrien.com. O'Brien is B-R-I-A-N.com. She is also on Facebook and Instagram at Ellen Grace O'Brien. These links will be on our website, theyogahour.com. We welcome your comments and questions. You can contact us via that website, or you can also sign up for our mailing list, theyogahour.com. Let's return to the second point then about understanding how the mind colors our experience of relationship and what in that is important for us to see in order to have happier, healthier relationships. How does that work? How does the mind color our experience of relationship?
Well, in the relationship advice that I was talking about in the last segment, from my grandmother, don't go to bed angry, or from my guru, be kind to one another. And then from my husband's guru, sadhana, really rowing the boat of life together with the oars of the virtues and having your goal, to find peace and happiness together. If you don't understand how the mind works, it's really hard to deal with emotion, because relationship is such a yoga intensive. It's the best, and it's helpful if you can see it in that way. But, one of the things that happens in relationship is that in the heat of everyday living, we find that old patterns, come up in the mind, and then they're superimposed on the relationship. And, we can become reactive and not even know why. We can know that we've gone off the deep end and we're really angry, and the other person just, didn't empty the garbage or something like that, but if we haven't studied and we don't understand that emotion or how we're thinking is just a pattern in the mind, and that it is not what we are, then we don't have as much capacity to modulate it or to regulate it.
Mm-hmm.
And we can just go off, which then triggers the other person to go off. And then you have, two egos in the mixed martial arts working, trying to knock each other out.
Smackdown.
Right, the slam down. So, but when you are studying yoga philosophy, you learn that, mind is a manifestation of nature, just like the objects in nature. Mind is subtle, but it is still made up of the changing elements of nature, qualities of nature. But what we are eternally as supreme consciousness is, pure existence being that has the capacity to witness. So what I'm saying is, when we understand the philosophy, it helps us practice observation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and then we can develop a kind of curiosity, like, oh, wow, where is this coming from? Instead of being swept away by our reactive nature, we can actually take a breath, we can go for a walk, and we can contemplate, we can come back and we say, I don't know why I said that. I'm really sorry. I just reacted. So we have some tools then for cooling down the thermostat, learning how, practically to find peace and happiness through our ability to witness, and then get a little space so we can behave better.
Mm-hmm. That, I think, is the key word for me, at least, that space, that idea of space, because what I find is that space, my meditation practice is what helps me find that space, and it helps my meditation practice, if it's steady, helps me elongate that space, because so often something will happen and before you even know it, it's like a knee jerk, like the doctor, me, pounding on your knee with a little hammer, and you don't have any control, your leg just kicks, you just go off before you even realize it. And when that starts to happen to me, I always take a moment to then pause and look, like, wait a minute, I just really got caught. Let's look at my meditation practice. And, I need to strengthen something there, because I lost that space disappeared, on me there, which my experience in relationships, when that space disappears, that's not a good thing. That's really not a good thing. It's how a little thing can become like this huge like crater that then you have to deal with.
Yeah. And I have heard from so many students over the years, which I find, you know, it always kind of gives me a smile, that there'll be a couple relationship and, you know, one person will be studying and practicing Kriya Yoga and the other one is not. But the one who is not is consistently benefiting from the one who is. And so they're in support of their partner's meditation and stuff. And then if the practitioner stops meditating, very often the one who is not meditating will say to them, gee, you know, seems like you haven't been meditating lately. And I can't even tell you how many times I've had that report, and it just makes me smile. And it's so beautiful to know, because sometimes people think, well, you know, I'm in a relationship, my partner is not a yogi, and, you know, so how is this going to be? Well, it's going to be good, because both of you are going to benefit. And, you know, my guru said very often that, you know, you have to understand that yoga is a path of aloneness. It's not a path of loneliness, but it's a path of aloneness, meaning that we have to do the practice ourselves. Mm-hmm. And it will always have an effect on our relationships. And you can't get caught in thinking, you know, I need my partner to practice. Your partner needs to be whoever they are.
Right. Wow, such good advice. So you shared a story from the Gospel of Matthew that I thought was illustrative. So would you share that story with our listeners?
Yeah, it's a story that actually I think appears in two different parts, kind of the same allegory, you know, as a metaphysician, you know, I look at scripture allegorically, and not necessarily as historical fact, but what is it telling us symbolically? So this is a story about the disciples. And when you look at something allegorically or symbolically, you have to think of yourself as playing all of the roles and it relating to some part of you. So of course, the disciples represent a part of us. Jesus as the Christ mind represents a part of us. The environment represents a part of us. So in this story, the disciples have witnessed all kinds of healings. You know, Jesus is healing the sick, raising the dead, feeding 5,000 people with a few pieces of bread. And, you know, these things are happening. And then, you know, Jesus is sort of tired after, you know, a long time. This is a lot of work. So the story is that then they go off to a ship and they're going to go over to the other side of the lake. And he goes down in the ship to rest, and the disciples are up on the deck, and this big storm comes and the waves are really high, and the disciples start to be afraid, you know, that they're going to drown. And so, you know, they, in their fear, you know, they go down and wake him up and say, you know, we're really scared. You know, there's waves out there and we're afraid we're going to perish. And that's the part, the story in the Bible, where he says to the, kind of scolds them. He says like, oh, you know, you have such puny faith, you know, you of little faith, what's the deal with you? You know, and you can kind of, I could just, in my mind, I just see this exasperation of the guru, you know, like, you've just seen this nature of life, you know, the miraculous nature of life. And now you've forgotten all about that and you're totally distracted by some wind. But, you know, when we look at the story allegorically, metaphysically, we say, well, you know, the lake is consciousness, you know, the boat is the mind, and the boat is being tossed by the wind, you know, which is our thought activity, the waves, the wave-like motions of the mind. Yes. And then the Jesus comes up and he, you know, he says to the wind, be still. And it, you know, calms down. And so, of course, it tells us that higher true self, the Christ in us, is that which says to the, swirling, worrying mind, calm down, just chill. Don't worry. Remember the nature of reality. Remember who you are. Remember what you know. Don't lose your faith when the winds start to blow. So it's a wonderful story about mind and about our own inner resources.
Right.
So, the disciple, my guru used to, define the word disciple all the time as learner. And so, as disciples, we're learning. We're learning, to remember the truth of our being and to not get caught. And it's very similar to what we were just talking about patterns arising in relationship. Like, wait a minute, like 10 minutes ago, I really loved you. And, now I don't even like you. And,
this is so true. I'm sorry. It's just like so true.
What happened?
What happened? I wanted to underline something that you just mentioned. So we've talked about this, that we can experience our thoughts and emotions as from a place of witness consciousness, which I think is such a blessing when we are able to get that. That's the space that I was talking about, that space that we have so that they don't overtake us. It was a great allegory, imagining that this is our boat, and these waves are, coming up. And then what you mentioned, in a way, it was this higher mind, Christ consciousness, then that is redirecting, our focus. So one of the things that you said in the talk is changing the direction of the stream of thought is a mental discipline that makes a profound difference. And again, I can't underscore how important I think this ability is to be able to, to not, we talk about a train of thought, right? Isn't that an interesting term, a train of thought, because sometimes like you're on that train with both feet, you're moving, you're going, So if we can be a witness, if we can redirect that train of thought, can you just expand on that? How does this ability of changing our train of thought help us, both in relationships and even in our meditation practice?
Yeah, I mean, that's what we're doing with jhana, our first step in meditation, learning to come into the meditative awareness, learning to concentrate, learning to return the mind, to a single focus. I think, this idea about the stream of thought, what is really valuable is to start tuning in to our everyday awareness, our stream of thought, when we're not meditating, like taking that skill of watching the mind, watching the thought activity that we learn in meditation so we can focus on one point, and then taking it into our daily life and just tuning in, like, what's going on in my head? What is the chatter? What is the station that I'm tuned into? And I remember when I talked about this, I said, I discovered that I didn't need to subscribe to Spotify because I'm my own Spotify. There's the, and I'm sure that's not the only app, but that thing where you have music, that's playing, and then you say what you like and what you don't like, and it begins to give you more of what you like and less of what you don't like. So that's kind of what we need to do. We need to pay attention to what, what is bringing us peace, what is bringing us back to divine remembrance. I had the most interesting experience with this. I was walking along the beach. I was walking my dog, walking along the beach one day, and I started to, I was tuning in. I'm trying to think, what was I thinking about? So sometimes I call my dog Kid because she's like a little kid, you know, she runs around. And so when I had that thought of Kid because she was doing her thing, I started hearing this Bob Dylan song, and the lyric was from, I think, Subterranean Homesick Blues, you know, it was. And it was the lyric was, "Watch out, kid, there's something you did. Something, something, don't know when, but you're doing it again." And so I'm listening to this memory, you know, this imprint, this samskara of this Bob Dylan song. But in a way, it had a negative implication, like, watch out, you know, there's something you did, and you know, you don't know when, but you're doing it again. So I'm thinking, is that the song I want to listen to? And, you know, I'm like right in the practice of this, in the moment practice of it. So I thought, no, that's not really the song, because it's not bringing me peace. And so I'll just bring one of Yogananda's chants into my mind, and I'll mentally chant as we're walking along, me and Kid. And so I started inwardly chanting this Yogananda chant, and just as I started doing that, a man passed me and walked in front of me. And this is in Northern California. And so he walks in front of me, and I look at him, and in the back of his shirt is some kind of a logo, a big circle on the back of his shirt that says Swami's Beach. And that's the name of the beach in Southern California at Encinitas, you know, where Yogananda built his ashram. And how funny was that, you know, as a little synchronicity. And so, did my meditation call forth a vision of Yogananda? You know, like, how did that? No, it wasn't that. It was just the lesson that I want to say about it was that what was in my mind called forth, you know, the universe is responsive to our mind and to the thoughts that we hold in our mind. And so when I started cultivating that thought of remembrance, divine remembrance, remembrance of Yogananda, this picture, you know, of Swami's beach just walked right in front of me. And it was just the universe's response to what was in my mind. And I can't say it any better than that, that what we hold in mind, the universe is going to respond.
Great example. So we mentioned at the beginning that there were three points that we wanted to talk about. The first is seeing God as love itself. The second that we've been just talking about, understanding how the mind colors our experience, our relationship. And then the third is learning to let go. How does this practice of learning to let go help us in having happier, healthier relationships?
It's so critical, and it's one of the most difficult things for us, I think, learning to let go, you know, like losing someone you love or having a betrayal in life. Those things that cut deeply for us, and we don't know how to forgive. We don't know how to stop the mind that ruminates on these things. You know, all of our practices support us towards letting go. But ultimately, what I've found is willingness is the key. You know, willingness to take note of the experience that you're having. Like, you know, I'm really hurt. I'm really angry. I'm upset. You know, whatever the experience is. Having the experience, you know, so often yoga students will say, you know, we say to ourselves, you shouldn't be having this experience because you should be more evolved. That's not true. You're having the experience that you're having. So the first thing, you know, to notice the experience that you're having and to honor it, like, wow, you know, I was really hurt by this. I'm really upset by this. I'm grieving over this. And it's really tugging, it's really pulling me into this experience all the time, like coming around, coming around, coming around. So I want to be free of that. So how do I do that? And then I think that we can't just do it. We can't just say, you know, just do it. It doesn't work that way in my experience. But I do think that when we become willing to let something go, because we go back to the very opening of the program, life is love itself. And it is always moving us in the direction of freedom. It's always moving us in the direction of love and peace. And so when we become willing to let go of whatever we need to let go of, life will show us a way. It'll show us a next step of how to move in the direction of love and of freedom. And that's what I've learned, you know, and it takes time. It takes awareness. It takes tuning in. It may take more than one step, but ultimately freedom comes.
Yes, it's really beautiful. Well, unbelievably, we've come to our last few minutes together. In closing, what words of encouragement or inspiration would you like to share with our listeners?
I think seeing our life and our relationships as our path of self and God realization, you know, really valuing the opportunity that we have to have other human beings in our life, you know, the person who really annoys you at work, the child who delights you, the pet who challenges and brings you joy, whatever it is, it's all God. And it's all that we're interacting with that allows us is calling us home, you know, to awaken to the truth. So to see it all in God is really helpful.
For listeners, you've been listening to the Yoga Hour. It's been my pleasure to share this time with you. I'm Dr. Laurel Trujillo, producer and host of the show. My guest today has been Yogacharya Ellen Grace O'Brien. For listeners who enjoyed this program, I would like to remind you again, if you want to hear more about Love Loves Love, you can check out the Kriya Yoga Today podcast, which is Yogacharya O'Brien's podcast, which has all three messages from this series, and they're labeled literally Love Loves Love 1, 2, and 3, so you can easily find them. You can find Kriya Yoga Today wherever you get your podcasts. You can also find out more about Yogacharya O'Brien, her books, and her many online programs at her website, ellengraceobrien.com. Again, you can also follow her on Facebook and Instagram at Ellen Grace O'Brien. Thank you so much, Yogacharya O'Brien, for joining me today on the podcast.
A great joy. And thank you again. It was a wonderful conversation. And thanks to the listeners and subscribers. And especially to the Yoga Hour team, volunteer to make this yoga teaching accessible in the world. So much love to you all. May love fill your heart and your mind and every relationship. Om Om.
For listeners, we hope you'll join us for the many online programs offered by the sponsor of this program, the Center for Spiritual Enlightenment. There is daily online meditation in the morning at 6:30 a.m. Pacific, in the afternoon at 4, and Monday evenings at 7:30. Again, all those times are Pacific time. There's also a Sunday satsang, a gathering of truth seekers at 10 a.m. Pacific each week. Also wanted to mention a couple of upcoming retreats. There's an upcoming in-person silent retreat with Yogacharya O'Brien and senior Kriya Yoga teachers at the Center for Spiritual Enlightenment in San Jose, California, from Thursday, May 23rd to Saturday, May 25th, 2024. There's also an upcoming Kriya Yoga retreat, which is going to be offered both online and in person from June 20th to 23rd. 2024. If you are drawn to receiving Kriya Yoga initiation and feel you are prepared, you can apply for this retreat at csecenter.org. There is a link right on the landing page, the homepage at csecenter.org. There are many other classes and events, so you can check out that website, csecenter.org. The Yoga Hour is a service project of the Center for Spiritual Enlightenment, a meditation center in the Kriya Yoga tradition. You can subscribe to the Yoga Hour wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're enjoying the show, think about a friend who might also like to hear it. Thank you to the Yoga Hour team founder and spiritual director Yogacharya Ellen Grace O'Brien, assistant producers Anne Hayes, Mickey Coronado, Christine Soate, and Lauren Leidinger. I look forward to being with you again. Until then, remember, you carry your own healing and wholeness within you. Share your peace and joy with all you meet. Bye now.